Welcome back to the EU Smart Tourism Podcast. I'm Misa from the European Commission. And big news today, we're rolling out this year's competitions for the European Capital and the European Green Pioneer of Smart Tourism.
Smart gets you further.
That exciting time has come around again. Cities across Europe are getting ready to show us the cool and smart ways they're making tourism better and smarter. Today's episode is a bit special. We're flipping through our archives to share stories from cities that have taken the top spots in the past. But we're not just giving them a round of applause, we're zooming in on the actual things they did to win. So this episode is more like a treasure chest, if you like, of ideas and actions. And so if you're thinking about getting your city into the spotlight, or you are working on making tourist spots pop, or you just love discovering places that are all about smart, fun travel, stick with us. You're going to get a lot of inspiration from cities that have really nailed it. Hang around, and we might just spill some secrets on how to be the next standout destination in smart tourism. Before we dive in, let's quickly refresh what these competitions are all about. The European Capital Smart Tourism scouts for cities that are leaders in digitalization, cultural heritage, accessibility, and sustainability. It's a big thumbs up to places that are using clever ideas to make tourism better for visitors and for locals alike. For the smaller spots out there making a huge splash in green tourism, the European Green Pioneer Award is your moment in the sun. It's our way of aiming the spotlight on those destinations that are thinking big about keeping tourism sustainable and ready for the future. So let's get started. We begin by talking about accessibility, looking back at a conversation we've had with the people from Bordeaux.
So hello, my name is Julie Benisti Oviedo. I'm Sustainable Tourism Manager for Bordeaux Tourism and Conventions Office.
I'm Edward de Tessière. I'm working at the Tourism Office of Bordeaux Métropole.
Bordeaux is, of course, one of our two winning cities from 2022 that, among other categories, excelled in accessibility, which is not the easiest task for an ancient town. Adapting the infrastructure is really complicated. Here's Edward.
Bordeaux is classified at the UNESCO, and it's a city dating back from the 17th and 18th century. So it's particularly difficult to address accessibility needs in a city like that. We have areas in the city that are from the Middle Ages, and so it's very difficult to adapt. And we need to ensure a secured urban space for everyone, because, you know, everybody can be at a moment or another, at a minute or another, someone disabled. So we needed to improve skills and communications tools to better welcome people with disabilities and raise awareness among tourism companies to adapt their facilities.
And this is all part of a bigger strategic plan for tourism in the city.
Actually, we have a new strategy for tourism in Bordeaux, and the second axis of it is how we build a destination for its residents in a human and solidarity destination, how we bring those values of solidarity and inclusivity as core values in our how we see tourism in the city. And we see it as a whole, so how we do welcome better visitors for information, for accommodation, to enjoy events, and how they can also enjoy being in a destination in autonomy, that they don't really need to have specific infrastructures or services to be able to enjoy a destination, but they can do it by their own because, like, everything is already accessible. That's, like, the goal we would like to reach.
But those list of achievements is really impressive.
We have a label that is called Destination pour tous, Destination for All. And Bordeaux was the first French city to get this label. It was in 2014. And it was renewed in 2019 to recognize improvements on the four handicaps. So the tourist office also has the national brand, Tourism and Handicap, that will be renewed this year. So we have a special guide that's been created for those with disabilities. We have four certified itineraries, a tour that we can do in the metropolitan area. The metropolitan area is fully accessible for those with motor or hearing disabilities. There's the development of a high-performing public transport network, 100% accessible. And we have a communication campaigns in 2022 with influencers specialized on this topic.
Recognition, investment, and guidance. And it's not all there is.
We also have different operations to open access to culture and local activities to everyone. For example, we created a city pass in 2014 to give access, free access to visitors for over 30 culture and leisure-focused establishments like monuments, museums, or exhibitions. You can also enjoy a guided tour in the city and an unlimited use of public transport. We have dedicated offering for families and children because being accessible is also having an offering adapted to everyone. For example, we have treasure hunts in the city center and in the green areas of the metropolitan area. And since 3 or 4 years now, there's a card for young adults available under the age of 26, and it gives access to culture, sports, and leisure activities, as well as reduced price and free entry to cinema and museums.
Transportation is obviously super important to people with physical disabilities. And here too, Bordeaux has gone above and beyond.
In Bordeaux city centre, you can really manage travelling with the tram, and it's fully accessible to everyone thanks to like large sliding doors and step-free access. But you can also have access with the bus and the river shuttle for everyone. There are also two other actions to make transportation more accessible. We have for our residents what is called a Mobibus, and it's a dedicated transport system for people with specific needs. So you can book it on demand, and it gives really access to the 28 cities in the metropolitan area. And of course, you always have adapted fees for all situations. For example, for people in precarious situations, they pay a much lower ticket than other people, or we have very different kind of fees for public transportation in the city.
The city has also developed a guide to help tourists and locals navigate the city's offerings according to their needs.
Yeah, it's a guide we are really proud of. It's a guide that contains a list of all of the offerings available to people with specific needs. For instance, tourist sites, accommodation, organized tours, specially adapted services. And it's a guide that is regularly updated in light of feedback and the needs of handicapped visitors. So we have this guide for about 10 years now, and we are now renewing the visual identity of the guide to make it much nicer. It's available at the information desk of the tourism office, and all of the information is also available online on our website. And we give this guide every time we have a question about accessibility. My mother uses the guide as well, very often, yeah, to get to the museums and all.
Bordeaux is also making an effort to progressively expand access to more groups, for example, in last year's wine festival.
At the tourist office, we also organize a festival, which is Bordeaux Wine Festival. And accessibility is obviously a main challenge for this huge event. So last year, we brought new actions on that, like non-gendered access, security mechanism for people who feel harassed. So the idea is that we want to see accessibility not only from point of view what the law make us do or ask us to do, but also how we can see inclusivity and accessibility further than that what the law is expecting. And for example, having a non-gendered access is something very new when we talk about accessibility and disability. It's for us to look after.
Next up, we're talking sustainability. We are traveling a bit to the north to talk about another very special destination. This is a small town with big ambitions that has defied all expectations. To guide us through this incredible story, I'd like to introduce you to Morten Vestergaard, the head of sustainability in the Danish town of Middelfart.
Yeah, happy to introduce you a little to the municipality of Middelfart. Our DNA is sustainability. Ever since we were formed in 2007, sustainability has been in the heart of all our political decisions. Now, we are from the small island of Fyn in Denmark, the island of the great storyteller Hans Christian Andersen. And what we've achieved within sustainability is more or less a fairy tale. Unlike the great storyteller's magnificent stories, our story is true.
Middelfart is the winner of the 2022 Eden Destination of Excellence competition, which is the predecessor of our Green Pioneer Award and prizes our small towns that are pioneers in sustainability.
Our municipality is a small one, 40,000 inhabitants, but we're proving that even if you're small, you can achieve great results within climate and sustainability.
Despite being somewhat remote, the town remains very well connected.
Getting to Middelfart is rather easy. I mean, we are at a train station, so public transportation that's carbon friendly is easy. We are one of the best located situations in Denmark if you're coming with an electric vehicle, and we have a very, very good infrastructure for cycling if you're going on cycling trips through Denmark or Germany, you know, the longer tourist trips for cycling. So it's easy to get to us. And we also do a lot in cyberspace. So we try to support people who want to hear our ideas and visit us with a lot of live sessions.
By combining political will, professionalism, and a collaborative approach, the town has managed to create a unique model for sustainability.
To become an award-winning municipality, our approach was rather simple because we were using, you know, the surroundings, and the surroundings are in Middelfart a wonderful and ambitious political setting. I mean, politicians make a difference. And our politicians want to work with sustainability, and they've done this since the municipality was more or less born in 2007. Our approach on working in sustainability is public-private cooperations involving citizens. So, I mean, we don't have several hundred people working on this at the municipality, but we have several thousand people working together with us on the sustainable agenda. And I think that's an important thing to be able to accomplish a mission like we've been on and still are striving for.
I agree. And actually, the town has managed to leverage its modest size and use it to its advantage.
A lot of people say size can have something to do with agility. And yes, I think we have agility to make this transformation towards sustainable development. And I think we have proven that this is something any city in Europe can work with success. So I think that's maybe the most important message to Europe. I mean, a small municipality can do great things within sustainability.
See why Middelfart is a pioneer in Europe?
It's easy to get here. We're working on hotels, Airbnbs, etc., with a sustainable profile. We have been working ever since we were formed with some of the biggest nature parks, public nature parks in Denmark. We've also been amongst one of the first municipalities in Denmark cooperating with other municipalities in making our marine life, the sea just at our front door, to a natural conservation park for small dolphins, etc., etc. So it's a very easy way to get nature experiences, but also getting into the ways of working with sustainabilities by going to, let's say, a local high school, folk high schools, where you can learn about sustainability in your vacation.
And the culmination of all this is Middelfart Climate Festival.
The Climate Festival, I mean, I remember when it started, it was, you know, in some of the smaller meeting rooms. It's developed to attend, we've last year attending approximately 10,000 people. And there are two main things we say. It's about climate and sustainability, not all other stuff, and it's for the people. So it's not big business that's coming and talking. This is ordinary people, artists and activists, NGOs, etc., who come and meet and discuss sustainability and climate.
2 years ago, when we spoke to Morten, he was telling us about a spectacularly ambitious plan for the festival that year. Listen to this.
When we won the Eden Award, we got even more encouraged to do international work and cooperate with Europe and also the world. This year's festival will be in the climate in space concept. Now, I said climate in space sounds crazy, yeah? What we're doing is we're working on what astronauts and psychologists call the overview effect. If you're in outer space like astronauts are, looking at the fragile planet, you will know we are in outer space. We are in space on this planet. And that makes you think, that engages you. So what we're doing practically, we're sending a weather balloon with cameras, loudspeakers, up in the air while we're doing the festival. So you get this view of a festival space getting smaller and smaller and smaller while the balloon is going into the air and we're transmitting. So this is breaking in Denmark and fun stuff. This model will presumably be used at the COP27 United Nations next climate meeting in November. So, I mean, the Eden Award really raised our ambitions, and we're working a lot with artists this year to make this happen, climate in space. I think Europe will hear a lot more about this.
Next up, we're talking about digitalization, looking back at a conversation we had about the city of Helsinki.
My name is Henna Siltanen, and I work as a senior advisor in smart tourism and digital development at the Tourism and Destination Management Unit at the City of Helsinki. I've been working in the tourism business industry for about a decade now, and my career so far has always been business and tech oriented. So you could say that my passion is in helping Finnish companies and the tourism industry to grow in a smart way and also to leverage digital transformation. And my work in the City of Helsinki is very closely related to smart tourism and the digital development of the tourism industry and the city's own services that we offer to our network partners.
First, we wanted to get her views of leading and emerging trends in digitalization and tourism.
So the main technological trends that I can see in tourism industry overall today, and also what is happening in the tourism industry in Helsinki, is that we're definitely living in the era of AI and machine learning. We can see that AI is already being adopted by tourism businesses, but we are still only starting to comprehend what we can do with generative AI and what it can do for us, both for good and bad. And it will take some time before we actually start to trust our AI colleagues and how it can actually help us to build a secure, safe, and reliable digital world around us. Another huge trend that I can see happening is the datafication, meaning that we're transforming everything from devices to human tasks into data-driven technology. So we're seeing a whole new level of, for example, business intelligence and analytics, as we're starting to create, for example, forecasting models that are based on AI. And what is really fantastic to see in Finland, as we're a small country, we're actually sharing tourism data very openly together among Visit Finland and the DMOs. And that is our competitive advantage, so that we're actually saving resources by working together towards a data-driven tourism industry and development. Thirdly, personally, I'm really fascinated about extended reality and the possibilities that metaverse could offer us. And it's not only these technologies individually separately, but actually how they're merging together and what kind of comprehensive experiences and services they can offer for us. For example, we're seeing in Helsinki that we have food delivery robots that are calculating their optimal route by using AI. Or we have virtual reality experiences that are using haptics and biometrics, that where the users can actually control their movements. And in this specific case example, it's really interesting to discuss how data is actually collected by using the technology directly on the user's body. So we can, for example, catch the eye movements or other biometric data that the companies never had access to before. But here we can, for example, see and catch if they're advertisements or if their products are located in the direct spot in this virtual reality environments, something that we could not replicate in the real world in terms of catching the data and collecting the data from the customers.
A lot of these trends are already being implemented in the city, most notably the sharing of open data between the municipality and the private sector.
The datafication, as it is a big trend. Helsinki, fortunately, was actually one of the pioneer cities that started to offer open data. So as a city, because we're collecting a lot of data, we also want to offer it as open data, because we believe that this really enables the collective development of better services in diverse use cases. And this was the idea behind forming Helsinki Region InfraShare, which is a pioneer open data service that offers over 500 data sets and 177 open APIs, aiming to make better use of public data in the Helsinki region. For example, in the tourism industry, the data sets include Helsinki's events and places, and independent companies are using this data to build their own services upon it and offer it as, for example, a commercial mobile application for tourists to use. Another thing that Helsinki was pioneering is, of course, Helsinki's digital twin that you may have heard of. It's like a city in a virtual form on the internet, and we use it as a smart development and simulation platform where we can test virtually ideas before we have to deploy them in practice. So this helps us to avoid making costly mistakes and to really create better services for both the visitors and residents. And we want to be very transparent with how we are collecting data and how we're also using it. So therefore, we want to encourage also others to be transparent with how they're using artificial intelligence in their services, for example. That's why we have created the Helsinki AI Register, which is where we give information about the city's artificial intelligence systems and encourage all interested parties to also help us to build human-centered AI in Helsinki.
So yes, a lot of progress has been made on the public sector side, but at this point, the adoption of technologies is still somewhat lagging.
One main challenge is the lack of understanding. And this is in general, not only in tourism industry, but nationwide in across all sectors. We do not even know the half of what we could do with generative AI and with other main technologies. Companies may not have the know-how, the resources, or they're just at the very beginning of their digitalization journey. We actually asked in mid-May, in one of our bigger seminars for tourism professionals in Helsinki, how and if they even use ChatGPT in their work. And we learned that the majority of the tourism professionals in Helsinki have never even used ChatGPT. Less than half of them uses it once in a while, and only 7% said that they're using it on a daily basis. So we're now in a test phase where we really need to encourage companies to test and experiment and also discuss together to share their own success stories and even failures of how AI could be and could not be used in service development and business development.
Another issue is the complex ethical and legal status of all AI-generated material. And this, of course, is a controversial question that is tied up to this technology from day one across all industries.
We hear a lot from the companies in Helsinki that they're concerned about the ethical use of AI-generated materials. They raise questions such as who owns the output, what material has been used to generate these materials, who owns the original copyright to those materials, is it legal to use the AI-generated materials for commercial purposes, and could they violate any existing copyright rules in doing so and face legal troubles in their business? So I can understand why businesses are very hesitant and concerned about using AI-generated materials. We really need to increase the awareness and know-how of how to use these materials safely and in a legal format.
And at least in some of these cases, we don't have clear answers. At least not yet.
But I do feel that we need to we need to find the answers together. This is a collaborative work that we need to do together with the companies and the public sector.
Another issue revolves around the accuracy of current chatbots and the scope of solutions that it can offer compared to a human representative.
We see that AI and technology is never a replacement for a human. We can use it as a tool to help humans be more successful in their work, but we cannot even replace our chat service with the automated chatbots at the moment, because we see that the questions we get from tourists in our tourist information are very unique. We always need to tailor make the answers so they're suitable to that specific customer, for example, based on their needs, motivations, and specific requirements. So the types of questions that we hear from tourists are not something that we could generate a standard response to with an automated chatbot.
Here's a typical example of a chatbot's answer being insufficient.
For example, customers are asking specific restaurant recommendations if they have a specific food diet or specific needs in terms of accessibility and so forth. This kind of information does not even exist on company's own website. Instead, it's something that our customer service reps know by firsthand, or they have to call the company to get this information from them. So ChatGPT or Bing, they do not have any existing material to answer these type of very unique, very detailed, very specific questions that we get from our customers. Instead, if the customers are asking, what are the typical sites that I could do in Helsinki, or how can I get from the train station to the nearest hotel? These are at a more generic level type of questions that AI tools are able to answer at the moment.
And on top of that, we have another known AI problem, sometimes called hallucination, where the AI chatbot replies to a question with a completely fictional made-up answer, like in this incredible example.
See, I did my research before joining this podcast. So I asked ChatGPT, how is AI used in Helsinki? And it gave at a very generic level some generic information. And then I asked in more detail, so what kind of chatbots in Helsinki are using AI? See, this is information that is already existing in our AI register. So I wanted to see if ChatGPT had access to that kind of a source material. But instead, what ChatGPT did was create a fictional story that in My Helsinki website, we are using a chatbot called Mara is answering our customer inquiries. And this is false. We do not have a chatbot in My Helsinki website, but for some reason, ChatGPT created this fictional story. So you have to be really careful with how you use ChatGPT and always do the fact checking before trusting that information.
Beyond AI and chatbots, Helsinki keeps on working on new projects sharing open data with the city's tourist operators. Case in point, this brand new software management platform.
Well, we have just launched our new knowledge management software platform called Datalokki, Helsinki Destination Insights. And this is where I have been spending most of my work time from the past 6 months or so. And what this actually offers is a centralized, accessible, cumulative, and comparable data for Helsinki's tourism and event operators. And it includes data from over 40 different sources, both from public and commercial sources of data. And it really aims to improve the decision-making in the tourism and event industries so that decisions would be based on up-to-date information instead of reports from the past. And this can really help us to focus more on analyzing real-time and predictive data, and also together with our network and partner companies to share interpretations of data and optimize operations together towards a more smarter development in tourism.
Finally, and this is something we cannot stress enough, handling data should be done with care, attention to best practices, transparency, and most importantly, with intention. Data should only be collected when there is an actual plan to use for it.
And data should never be collected just for the sake of collecting it. Unfortunately, we can see that there's a lot of hype and a bit of a competition as well in terms of who collects the most data or who has most amount of data to use in their operations and decision-making processes. But there should always be a specific use case for handling data. Otherwise, it's just meaningless. And we should also definitely share more data together, preferably through automation, through APIs, instead of by doing manual labor separately in different organizations. So we can definitely reduce the amount of work that is involved in data handling if we share data and share good practices together more often. Another recommendation, or something that we in Helsinki want to encourage everybody to consider further, is the ethical use of data, even before you start to collect and handle it. A very good framework for this would be the European Union AI Act, as well as, for example, Helsinki's principles for the ethical use of AI and data, if you want to benchmark these principles in more detail.
Finally, we're looking back at a conversation we've had about cultural heritage and the way it is being celebrated in the German city of Karlsruhe.
My name is Jennifer Hohmann. I am part of Karlsruhe Tourism. I've worked there for the past 5 years, mostly in culture marketing. Just local networks, but also anything touristy that has to do with culture as well.
Karlsruhe is known to many in Germany as the home of the state's highest courts. But there is a lot more to it. Here's Jennifer.
I think the first thing that always comes to mind, especially for people from Germany, is that we are considered the city of law, because we're an important city for democracy in the country. We have the two highest courts here, also the Federal Constitutional Court. We're also a city of inventors, especially for mobility. So Carl Benz, who invented the car, was born here. Karl Drais, who invented the bicycle, or the forerunner of the bicycle, was born here. And we still remain Karlsruhe's number one biking city, so we kind of try to incorporate that history into our current offer as well. And this pioneering spirit has kind of remained too, I believe. We have 9 or 10 universities, I'm not sure at the moment. We have converted old districts into spaces for the creative industries. Probably our inner city is very interesting too, because we have a very rich heritage in terms of architecture, from neoclassicism to Bauhaus, Art Nouveau, modernism. Also our location, food and drink, we're located next to Switzerland and France. We have everything from local pubs to Michelin stars, award-winning sustainable slow food restaurants. So yeah, it's kind of a joie de vivre, you know, kind of a very mixed vibe urban area.
In recent years, Karlsruhe has been hard at work marketing itself as a tourist destination, leveraging its spot as a unique cultural space in particular.
But the thing is, I guess for tourism in particular, culture is kind of 90% of what we market, because it's the huge offer that we have is most like our unique selling point. I'd say with the city, it's the most important thing that we market as a tourism destination.
And beyond the fact that there's a lot to offer, the city has been working on loads of different innovative approaches to enhance the experience, from mobile shows to app-based games.
I mean, like any other city, we have a lot of city tours, culinary tours. We also recently started using our hop-on, hop-off city tour bus for live comedy. So that's been really fun, and hopefully we can continue doing that in the future. Like I said, as a city of law, we've also invested into app-based games. So kind of like an outdoor exit game that takes people on like a self-guided tour through the city, and they have to solve a scandal at the local mint from a couple of decades ago. With the State Theatre, we've also created an app, like a self-guided audio tour called Hieronymus. So we kind of try to incorporate our partners into tours as well. And every once in a while, we also do interactive events with our local culture brand, such as a scavenger hunt for students and young people. So we kind of try to make our locals tourists as well.
And this is why in 2020, Karlsruhe received the category award for cultural tourism.
So my colleague and I were actually invited to Helsinki in 2019. We were a surprise to be shortlisted at the end of the year, because we're among so many capital cities, world-famous tourist destinations. Because Karlsruhe, even though it's a gorgeous city with a very high quality of life, it's still somewhat of a hidden gem. So that was really a nice surprise for us. Getting to talk with cities like Helsinki, Gothenburg, Florence, like all these amazing cities that have applied over the past few years and joined the network. They probably didn't know about us before either. And it's just nice, because sometimes you even don't realize how many good ideas or like smart ideas you actually have in your city until you actually get to share them. And people are like, oh, we never thought about that. Oh, that's actually very cool. And how did you go about that? So so that's been really nice for us to actually be like, oh, we're doing something right. Like, that's actually good to just have that positive feedback from the outside world.
And also, since the award, Karlsruhe's efforts continue with a host of other innovative projects in the pipeline.
Yeah, actually, quite a few. So at the moment, we are collaborating with the Baden State Museum, which is also housed in the castle, which is right in the center of the city, because they have created a Tinder-style app called Ping, which lets users match and chat with exhibits. So literally like Tinder or Bumble or whatever, you can swipe left and right. And we are trying to expand that with them. So from next year, the app will also include more touristy objects or exhibits in the vicinity of the castle grounds and the central market square, so that visitors will be able to chat and potentially flirt with landmarks like our pyramid in the market square, statues of Hercules, or even a rubbish bin, because they all have something to tell about the city of Karlsruhe. So we're kind of trying to get storytelling into that as well.
Lots of Karlsruhe's recent success comes down, as always, to good networking, cooperation between different institutions in the city, and a good amount of motivation and creative ideas.
First of all, I'd say networking is key. Like I said, our municipal brand, Culture in Karlsruhe, is one example of how museums, theatres, archives, universities, cultural centres and more can come together to join social media accounts, joint events, or just to publicity, and the publicity to foster the collaboration and the visibility. Unique selling factors such as Center for Art and Media have also helped, for example, winning the title of UNESCO City of Media Arts. We're the only city in Germany so far with that title. So definitely to get together and figure out where you can combine things and just work towards a common goal. And like many modern cities, we've made an effort to repurpose industrial buildings, for example, such as the Old Slaughterhouse District, which is now a hub for startups and the creative industry. And also one of Germany's largest former ordnance factories now houses the University of Applied Sciences, the Municipal Gallery, our world-renowned Center for Art and Media. So these are all institutions that in turn can be integrated into the tourism experience and kind of have a very unique building around them with very big foyers, very high ceilings. So it's like an experience in itself. And probably last but not least, just to combine things that don't usually go together. For example, one of our oldest thermal baths is now home to a fantastic media arts installation called Sounds of Life, where visitors can jump out of the pool and then relax under the, you know, this big neoclassical cupola of the historic entrance hall and immerse themselves in music and light installations projected onto the ceiling. So if COVID has taught us anything, it's that sometimes we have to think outside the box and make use of what we already have in new ways.
And just like that, we reached the end of today's episode. To all the cities out there inspired by today's episode, we're calling on you to throw your hat in the ring. The competition for the European Capital of Smart Tourism and the Green Pioneer Award is your stage to shine. We can't wait to see the incredible ways you're making tourism smarter, more inclusive and greener. As always, a huge thank you to all our guests for sharing their insights and to you for listening. See you in the next episode.
Smart gets you further.